We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Okay, let's be honest about something.
Man, look here.
It's always been us versus them. The national media never liked us from the beginning. Never gave a damn about us.
For the last... Since 2017, my wife been beating me down, man, in my man cave over here on Norman Boulevard.
But guess what? We didn't care back then. So why would we care now?
And I told her today, you're going to be different. I'm not going to start watching the game with Jake, Danny, and Coke. I'm going old school, Gator Bowls, Maxwell House Coffee.
We've endured the losses, the heartbreaks. We've heard the jokes.
I turned the TV on to YouTube, and they have Jimmy Page and Robert Plant video, The Rain Song. I put a picture of Trevor Lawrence by that video, and I put a tire by the video, and told my wife I'm ready.
A new coach, a new quarterback, and a brand new attitude.
I seen when the Jaguar defense made that stop, I told my wife, look. Look what I see.
Till the room comes off, till the lights go out. Till my leg give out, can't shut my mouth. Till the smoke clears out, and my eyes turn out. I'ma rip this till my bone collapse.
Jaguar turned to a saber-toothed tiger. They turned to a tiger, man.
Surrounded by young, talented playmakers, hungry to change the national perception of their team.
The Jaguar turned to a saber-toothed tiger, and it was over with. It was the Kodiak bear, like running track. The Kodiak bear running track was gone.
Soon they'll all have to give a damn. And they're gonna hate every single second of it.
I had no problem knowing that. Guess what? The day is my day where my wife would not ridicule me for all these years. No more in my man cave. drinking Mike Wellhouse coffee. Watching Trevor Lawrence.
A generational talent, they say. One of the best to do it. Wearing our teal on game day.
Watching the Led Zeppelin, the Rain Song, and the Tiger on the Wall brought us through.
We are Duval.
Go, Jay.
And we like it here. And guess what?
Where history ends, the future begins.
Till the room comes off, till the lights go out, till my leg give out, can't shut my mouth, till the smoke.
1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, happy Tuesday indeed, everybody. Are you still doing Victory Week, Tony? Did you do Victory Monday?
Oh,
Double Victory
for sure,
Monday?
Yeah.
Happy Victory Tuesday.
I mean,
Tuesday,
what are we supposed
then
to do? We don't have anything else to talk about.
We didn't lose.
Except the win. Yeah.
We didn't lose, baby. E.T., way to welcome me back with Holiday's Greatest Hits right there.
Oh, it's Tuesday!
We had Tigers, saber-tooth Tigers, Kodiak Bears.
And 2 weeks in a row that the Jags ain't lose, baby. Come on,
it
somebody
feels good. Jeff running Lockman track is here with us. Even though we're not checking the tape logs, we can still feel good that we didn't lose a football game this weekend.
Isn't it nice to have two Victory Tuesdays in a row? And by the way, that was awesome editing right there, by the way.
Classic, man.
A little razzle dazzle.
I expect nothing great less. Expect nothing
great
less. No, it was great.
I'm going to tell you, did you get that phone call, E?
Yeah, that's the phone
no
call.
No, we took that on the air.
Yeah,
that was on the air last
that
week.
That was live?
Oh, yeah.
Air?
Yes, yes.
That's got to be one of the all-time greatest call-ins in 1010XL history.
There's no question.
Oh, it's on. Yeah, it's on the list.
Maybe the best.
Yeah.
Honestly, because it was, just the enthusiasm, the Maxwell House coffee.
The Kodiak Bear.
The Kodiak Bear was running
track, and he was gone.
Mm, love it.
I want to step into that guy's shoes and wear his glasses just for a day.
Hey.
I mean, maybe not a day. Maybe about an hour.
The view is pretty good right now, man. So,
yeah.
We're on a winning streak, Logs. I don't have one, a streak of one, but nevertheless, wasn't the most impressive Seattle Seahawks squad I've ever seen on Monday Night Football last night. So there's a chance coming up. The Jags historically have not fared well on that East Coast to West Coast trip of theirs. But new team, new players, new coaching staff, fresh start. We'll see where it goes.
The good thing is that if you look at Seattle and their defense, I mean, statistically, the Seahawks are about the same category as the Jaguars are defensively. And the productivity that Seattle's getting out of their defense is not much. And the Jaguars defense is not doing a great job either. So, I mean, when you have a defense that's playing like that, and then you have a situation where the quarterback play in Seattle is not very good, I think it's a great chance. And I mean, I'm talking a great chance, because right now our quarterback is playing much better than their quarterback, and that's not even debatable.
No, I agree with you. And I think what we learned last night, we'll see if Seattle can stack up back-to-back efforts against the run like they had last night against Kamara. Kamara was lightning coming out of the backfield. They didn't have any answer for that. But as far as him running the ball, they did a really good job against that. And I think we learned that the Saints defense is good enough to shut down Seattle. And we'll find out on Sunday if the Jaguars defense has made enough adjustments to shut down anybody at this point, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't know if adjustments would be... I mean, look, I'd love for the Jaguars to be able to say, hey, let's just tweak a couple of the things that we're doing and we can be much better. I just don't see that happening. I think it's going to take an offseason for this defense to take a huge jump up. And I think they can play better, because I think everybody has the ability at improvement. But I think overall as a unit, if we're looking to expect to see this defense to be in the top 25% in defense of the National Football League, it ain't happening. You know, so you just got to get this group and this personnel playing the best that you possibly can. And, you know, and the crazy thing is that so far out of the six games that you played, you know, they've done a good job against the run, which was the entire goal with, you know, kind of adding to the personnel and free agency to kind of do a good job fortifying the front, do better against the run. And they've been able to do that, but they just have not been able to affect the passer and the passing game enough to have a significant impact in the games.
All right, well, Urban Meyer speaking yesterday at his Monday press conference as the Jags started the new week, weighed in on the defense. And one thing, in doing a little self-scouting during the bye that they discovered, he said they thought they could play man coverage, but they quickly learned not so much.
I think we went into the storm thinking that we're going to be playing, be a very high percentage of man coverage. We figured out quickly that we're going to have to mix in a lot of zone. And then that's where you say, okay, the number of reps you have to get the team ready to play that zone cover. You can't say, okay, let's play, but go play zone. So that bye week was good. We spent some time on that, the combination of both. That's the biggest thing on defense.
All right, Logs, why can't they play more man coverage? Is it because they don't have the personnel on the back end to cover guys that long, or they don't have the pass rush that enables you to play man coverage?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, but I'll start with the back end first. You know, when you finished up the preseason, you were thinking, okay, we've got a good young rookie that we feel real good about it, and Tyson Campbell, and C.J. Henderson is a first-round talent. We spent a lot of money, obviously, in free agency for Shaq Griffin, and so we feel really good that we've got three really good corners that can cover. Well, you know, C.J. is now gone, and Tyson has been struggling, especially at the point when the ball arrives, and Shaq's been solid, but he hasn't been great. And I think you feel good enough about Rayshon Jenkins' ability to cover. But, you know, if you don't have the guys to play man, you just can't do it. And you've got to be able to keep the eyes back at the quarterback and react. Otherwise, you're going to get burned. And the other way is, okay, well, if our personnel's not that good in the back end, well, maybe we can get to the quarterback fast, so then these guys don't have to cover that much. And there are some opportunities with the ball being errant. Well, they haven't been able to affect the passer enough either. So, I mean, statistically, you look at the Jaguars' defense and opposing quarterbacks are averaging 112 rating against them, and they've only been sacked 8 times. I mean, that's not a great number. You know, you start talking sack differential, turnover differential, then obviously turnover differential we've talked about tremendously throughout the entire season so far, but sack differential is one that we haven't talked much about, and the Jaguars are actually doing pretty good there, but I think it's more so because Trevor Lawrence is just doing an amazing job with his pocket presence. But, you know, 8 sacks as a defense after 6 games, that's just not a winning number.
Jeff, coming out of the last couple of games, we've talked a bunch about Tyson Campbell and Nevin Lawson, and it felt like Miami really went after Lawson a couple weeks ago in the game in London. We haven't talked much about Trey Herndon, who got back on the field a couple of weeks ago. How has he played in the last couple of weeks?
Trey?
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't been great. I mean, that's, you know, that's the fact. I mean, if otherwise you're not playing Nevin Lawson that much. I mean, a guy that's been in the league for 8 years and never had a career interception until he got one thrown up to him by Tua. And so I'm not trying to down a guy because he doesn't get an interception, but I mean, look, if you've been in the league for 8 years, surely you would have had an interception by now. I mean, so that just kind of gives you an idea. But, you know, I think what they're doing, they're just trying to do something different, you know, because Trey Herndon and Clay Brooks hadn't played exceptionally well. And they're like, all right, well, look, if we're not playing real well, then let's try something different, which I give them credit for, because a lot of times coaches will continue just to do the same thing and not try to mix it up. And it just doesn't change. It's, you know, the old saying is that, you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So, I mean, by trying something different, by playing a different guy, I like that. But the reality is that the production still is not there. And at some point, you just got to realize, okay, this is what we are. What's the best way to get them to play the best that they can? And that's, I think, where they're at not right now. And that's coming to the realization that they need to keep their eyes back towards the quarterback to give themselves the best chance of playing better defense. And that's playing a zone type of system. And that's not the scheme that they want to play. You know, they want to play an aggressive multiple, you know, be aggressive. But the reality is, if you don't have the pass rush and you can't affect the quarterback or you can't cover guys, it's hard to play that type of defense.
Should they have known it earlier? Like I feel like when they traded Sidney Jones, they let Sidney Jones go, and he ends up, I think, in Seattle, right? This mm-hmm. is where he ended up.
I saw him that's knock right. a ball down last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, like the book was he was better as a zone coverage guy than a man coverage guy. Was that an accurate statement?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think also consistency, availability is always a question when you're talking about Sidney, because he had a long history of being hurt. And the Jaguars want to try to keep guys that are going to be available. I mean, that's availability always supersedes ability in a lot of personnel people's minds, and rightly so. You know, because you got to have a guy that's going to be able to suit up on Sundays and not sit there and say, well, you know, he's going to be really good for us, but then you never see him on a Sunday. So I think that was more of the issue with Sidney Jones.
Interesting. All right. Well, today we've got Jeff Logman here with us, and we're not necessarily checking any game tape from this weekend, but I'm sure Logs has reviewed, as it sounds like he has, the beginning portion of the Urban Meyer, Trevor Lawrence era here in Jacksonville. So if you've got Jaguar questions, bring them to this place right here on a Check the Tape Tuesday. Jeff Logman is along with us. Anything Jaguar related is fair game today. Tony Smith is here. ET is here, as you're well aware. After a spectacular opening to the program, got me in the right mood on my return. And we're all dreaming of what Mike DiRocco is going to bring us for breakfast on Thursday.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
D-Rock, what a damn shame.
Psych.
Such a loser when it comes to the breakfast bowl. But, hey, you know, now everyone's been bitten, and I feel like we're starting fresh in many ways. I hope that breakfast is fresh, Mike. So pick it up piping hot from wherever you're stopping by. He's threatened to bring in a box of Cheerios. You do that. And see what you get for the rest of the season for your breakfast from anybody who ends up buying on a weekly basis. Or maybe we'll let D-Rock go on a little bit of a run there. All right, Jeff Logman is here with us. The way to get on board, many of them, 641-1010 on the phone lines. Also on the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Hit us up on our various Twitter handles, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, and at IME2T.
I just be chilling.
He's just chilling. I like the video.
I just be chilling.
Very inaccurate, but nevertheless, it was well done. And this is 1010XL. Go check that out on the 1010XL Twitter feed, and I'm sure other places as well. All right, we're off and rolling here with Jeff Logman, Tony Smith, and ET. I'm Mike Dempsey. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I feel good about the second run we're going to go on here, about just the efficiency. Now we've been in the system for a while. The excuse of a new system, the excuse of a young quarterback, that's all gone because our young quarterback's playing pretty good.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
No more excuses. Tony, I got to ask you, did you realize they had gone on a first run at some point? You're going for a second run here.
No.
Run of one.
Yeah.
You know, I know what he's saying, but...
I get it.
You know.
So we're not on a two-week run right now.
The next... we're kind of on a mini run right now.
Run is a run.
Let's continue that run then. We're not going to move on to the next run quite yet, unless we're just talking about the next victory. I don't know, man. I don't know. Logs, no excuses for this football team anymore. So that's what Urban Meyer says, right?
I'm all about a second run, right? How about a first run?
Yeah, and, right. I'm trying to mix in that first run here. Look, legitimately, if the Jags go to Seattle and win, we won't know what to do with ourselves. Are you kidding me? Double the win total from last year?
The one thing that he said that is definitely accurate is that, you know, we've got a young quarterback playing pretty well.
Yeah.
And here's some numbers for you. In weeks 1-3, Trevor Lawrence obviously was 0-3. His completion percentage in those first three games was only 54.2%. His yards per attempt was only 5.7 yards. He had 5 touchdown throws and 7 interceptions. His passer rating was only a 60.3. In the last three games, 1-2, obviously getting last win there against Miami, his completion percentage went up to 66.3, so that's an increase of about 12%. That's much, much improved. His yards per passing or pass yards per attempt went to 8.1, which, again, it was at 5.7.
Huge jump, yeah.
And then touchdown interception ratio, not that he's thrown a lot more touchdown, but he's flipped it. In other words, he has twice the number of touchdowns to interceptions, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, and his passer rating jumped 33 points to a 93.8. I mean, that's major improvement, significant improvement for a young quarterback, and it's not very often that you see that great of improvement that early in a young quarterback's career.
I've mentioned this a few times on the show, Jeff, over the course of the last couple of days, Friday and yesterday, but what does it say to you that you just went through all those numbers showing Trevor Lawrence's improvement over the course of the last three games that he's played? What does it say to you that he's been doing that with Linder going out, with Can going out, with DJ Chark going out, and he just continues to get better week to week?
It means he's exactly what we thought, which I think is going to be, you know, essentially a generational prospect. And I think that's the impressive thing. And that, you know, last week, the one thing that I really focused in on as far as the video stuff of what I do for you know, Jaguars All Access and Jaguars Weekend and such was the pocket presence of Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he just has in order for a quarterback to be able to be a quarterback, and that most people think just playing quarterback is throwing the football and digesting defenses and finding the open guy and all those kind of things. To be able to do all that kind of stuff, you have to be able to give yourself the best chance at doing all those things by being really good in the pocket. And that's what Trevor does that just seems second nature without even trying hard. And there were so many plays that he had against Miami because it was a perfect example or snapshot of his abilities because Miami brought so much pressure. For example, you know, they're bringing a defensive back, a nickel back off of the outside, and the nickel's unblocked, and he doesn't stare at the guy to find out that he's coming, but he kind of sees it with his peripheral vision. But then knowing that this guy is unblocked and he's fast, he escapes the pocket with great speed so that he can have time to get rid of the ball. And then another instance, he's got a guy coming on the blind side. He shuffles in the pocket up, in other words, climbing the ladder, and then shuffles out to his right to find an open lane and makes a nice delivery. And you know, and the crazy thing is that, look, the completion percent is 66.3 in the last three games. But, guys, how many drops did we see in this past game against the Miami Dolphins? What, like 3?
Yeah.
And then we're probably about 2 or 3 batted balls that the wide receivers don't work back to the ball in a scramble rule situation, which is like one of the top rules that there is. And when plays break down, work your way back to the quarterback and back to the ball so you can keep the window open for the quarterback to make the throw. And some of the wide receivers that the Jaguars have aren't doing that. And so if they do that better, his completion percentage is even higher.
All right, if you want to get in with Jeff Logman today and have him break down your particular question, you're welcome to do it at 641-1010. So let's go to the phone lines for the first time this morning, Logs. Ken in Orange Park is going to bat leadoff on Jaguars today. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, good morning, guys. Actually, my location is hiding in a dark corner from my boss right now.
Excellent. Excellent. We won't
I'll
tell.
I'll try to make it quick. So quickly, I had a 2-part question for you guys. The first one dealt with the wide receivers. I know we just, you know, brought in Marvin Jones, but with the news that Chark's going to be out for the season, do you think we're more apt to, you know, sign a true proven number one, or do we re-sign DJ? And the second part of my question is, with the defensive line, you know, just being so bad this year, I want to see Josh Allen emerge, but, you know, I'm kind of getting doubtful on that. Do you think it'd be better to maybe go after a proven guy like a Melvin Ingram, who I've, you know, heard little whispers that might be available in a trade? Or do we just draft a guy like maybe Thibodeau if we're there to take him in the first? And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you, Jenny.
All right, Lugs, you jump in there on the receiver position in Chark's future.
The receiver, we'll start with that. And obviously he's talking about finding a guy in the offseason, not now, because you're not going to go out and sign a number one right now. They just don't exist. I think what you got to basically work with what you've got. First of all, let me say this. Jamal Agnew, I think, has shown great improvement. And here's a guy that you signed essentially to be only a special teams returner. And I think he is starting to show that he might be your second best wide receiver right now. I mean, would you guys argue that? I mean, 5 catches, 78 yards, and when he touches the ball, he's got a little bit of giddy up, and he makes you go, oh, okay. So I like Jamal Agnew, and I think his ceiling, I don't know how high it is, but I think he's going to help this team get better, I think, as the season goes on. Tavon Austin, I think, has got to have a little bit more of a role, and I'm not understanding what happened to Tyron Johnson, who they acquired, and he's a second-year player out of Oklahoma State, and we were told that you know, the guy's got great speed, but yet he was inactive this past game, and he hasn't even really been much of a factor with the offense. So for the rest of the season, you are what you are, and you just got to hope that you can continue to have a young quarterback get better, the receivers get a little bit better. In the offseason, yeah, you want to go out and try to find a number one. And is DJ Chark a number one? No, he's not. He hasn't been consistent enough, and he hasn't been available enough. And so would you like to try to bring him back? Absolutely, on a one-year type of prove-it deal. And he may be open to that because there might not be a whole other options for him. But, I mean, look what the Cincinnati Bengals did in the draft by getting their guy in the first round, and many people were sitting there saying, oh, yeah, you got to get an offensive lineman to help your quarterback. And, yeah, I get that, but, man, that guy that they've got there, he is something else, and all of a sudden now you're looking at Cincinnati as a team that's going to be reckoned with this year.
Yeah, too bad there's not that guy in next year's draft, at least.
Yeah, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase was special, man. And
he had the backstory with Burrow, too. You know, it was a rare set of circumstances.
And watching his film, and obviously he didn't play in 2020, opted out. But, wow, I mean, watching him in 19, and that was obviously with Joe that year – I mean, you talk about a guy that the excitement just begins when he catches the ball. I mean, a lot of receivers, the excitement kind of begins when the ball's on its way to a guy, and then it kind of ends once he makes the catch. And I think that's one thing that we're seeing with the Jaguars wide receiver core is that, I mean, I think the only guy right now that is making the excitement begin when he catches it is Jamal Agnew. I mean, right now, Marvin Jones, Marvin's doing a great job, and he's got great chemistry with Trevor Lawrence, but the rest of them, we're not seeing a lot of the YAC, which is, you know, the acronym for yards after catch. So, but defensively, that question is an interesting one. Do you go out of, you know, after a Melvin Ingram type guy? Do you draft a guy? All of the above. You've got to find a way to affect the passer. You've got to find horses up front in your defense. And the interior, obviously, has got to be looked at in a big way. And I think Josh Allen had a tremendous game last week. I think he's one of the best defensive performances I've seen him have. Could he have finished a couple plays? Yes. But, I mean, he was active. He was physical. He was absolutely pressuring the quarterback. He did not get a sack. But I thought he had a really, really nice game. The problem is that you're not getting much else from the rest of the guys.
Yeah, as far as Melvin Ingram goes, zero chance, I think, that they'll try to get Melvin Ingram. I mean, they could have signed him. He didn't sign until July 19th. They could have just signed him. And I'm not certainly giving up a draft pick now on a team that's not contending for the playoffs to bring in Melvin Ingram, who's on a one-year deal. So he's not a guy I'd be at all interested in if I were the Jaguars. I don't think they would be either, or else they should have shown that throughout the summer. We talked about him, Tony, as a guy like, hey,
yeah,
why not? If you're going to play 3-4, let's bring in some options here. Yeah. And
we talked about Justin Houston. There were a few of those guys.
And they seem to show no interest in any of those guys. So at least for right now, I'd be very surprised if they went the Melvin Ingram route. Let's get Steve in Melbourne up next here on Jaguars Today. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Good. What's up?
All right. I got a a comment to the first kid's question. You just hand a blank check to Devontae Adams next year and say, hey, you're worth any number you put down. And that's that. But my question is, given what we saw last night's game with Seattle, and given that we're pretty much even in the sack department, mind you, there's a talent difference on defense-wise, I mean, do you see us probably doing pretty good against that Seattle offensive line, which struggled like hell against that New Orleans Saints D-line last night? And if I could slide one more question in for Jeff, he mentioned, you know, pass rushers for next year. If we're not picking one or two, Thibodeau's out of the story. I got to ask, have you seen this kid out of Michigan, Aiden Hutchinson, how much of a dominant force he's been lately?
No, I have not.
And what would you think really about that?
Yeah, we're not turning our attention to breaking football. Down the draft here in week 8 of the National Football League season. Appreciate it, but it's not going to go that route here. There'll be plenty of time for that in the future. Logs, what about the matchup versus Seattle's offensive line this week?
I think their offensive line is not great, but I think it's sufficient. I think the biggest issue with Seattle right now is that they just don't have very good quarterback play. And I've never been a fan of Geno Smith, and I don't think he's very good. And the drop-off from Geno Smith or to Geno Smith is significant when Russell Wilson is such a good football player and he makes that offense go. And just like the last 2 years, we have been criticizing or had been criticizing, many people have, the Jaguars' play of the offensive line. And look, you always want to get better. And I was saying that, look, they're not that bad, not as bad as everybody thinks. And at the beginning of the season, I made the statement that Trevor Lawrence will help this offensive line and he'll make them better. Well, now we actually are starting to say that the offensive line's doing a pretty good job. Well, hell, it's because Trevor Lawrence is making them better. And it's no different with Seattle. When Seattle's offensive line would be fine if they had Russell Wilson taking snaps and doing some creative type things. So that obviously makes a big difference to who's behind center. And that's one of the reasons why I was always so down on Gardner Minshew, because he did not make offensive lines better. He actually made them worse because he didn't play within the confines of the system and he didn't have any pocket presence. His only answer was to escape the pocket and then put his offensive linemen in a bind, because now the angles always changed. And so, I know that's a little bit more of the answer than just about Seattle's offensive line, but that just goes to show you, in my opinion, how important the play of the quarterback is to an offensive line's performance.
All right, keep them coming at 641-1010. Jeff Logman's here with us until noon today, so stick around. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and ET here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The guy that's really come on is Agnew. You know, he's if you even watch that Miami Dolphin game close, he was open. He had a couple where he pulled away. He's our best separator right now. But that an offense without speed on the outside, like elite speed, that's the first time I've had to deal with it.
Jaguars today on 1010XL.
All right, we are rolling along here. Not a check the tape Tuesday necessarily, just a double victory Tuesday is all it is right now. Because we're getting two victory Tuesdays out of the one win.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if we win next, does it make it a triple victory Tuesday next week if
Why
we
not?
Win our second in a row? Whatever.
It'll be Big Tuesday, because right now it's young Wednesday. But if we get three in a row, Big Tuesday.
Big Tuesday.
Big Tuesday.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. I look forward to that.
I look forward to Big Tuesdays.
Let's have Big Tuesday around these
Big
parts,
Tuesdays.
Man. It's been a while. Logs, Jeff Logman here with us. Just to kind of close the book on the Agnew discussion for now, got this one on Twitter from Jags fan in Ecuador. Welcome to the broadcast here, Jags fan in Ecuador. Is Jamal the real deal, or do teams just not have tape on him yet? It seems impossible that he was playing defense as recently as he was.
Yeah. I mean that's the reality, is that he was playing defense, and a lot of people probably thought, well, he was a running back because he's got a 30 numbers, and now he's just making the switch to wide receiver. Well, you know, he was a defensive back and is making the switch to play offense. And wow, I mean, some coach screwed up way back when and didn't move him to offense, which he should have been playing offense all along, because he's just got a great ability to kind of find openings. So you know, that's an interesting kind of a proposition because, you know, when you talk about a guy who hasn't played the position for very long, but he has a big impact as a returner, and then on offense, he's starting to show some things that makes you go kind of, huh, well, okay, he's got an explosive element to him. Kind of like Cordarrelle Patterson, who it took the league and coaches a long time to kind of figure out where he finally belonged because they kept trying to play him at wide receiver, and finally Bill Belichick got a hold of him and said, this guy's not a receiver because he doesn't catch the ball well enough, so let's just hand it to him. And so they started to find creative ways to get him the ball as far as speed reverses, you know, putting him up in the backfield as a running back and little quick screens, tight end type of plays, and it's worked. And so could it be the same type of situation with a guy like Jamal Agnew? Well, I mean, I hope so. I mean, I hope that ceiling just keeps on climbing.
Another one here from Cobalt Blue on that front. After watching the tape of last night, how Alvin Kamara just chewed him up, catching the ball out of the backfield, can Jamal Agnew play a similar role in a receiving capacity? Can Agnew play ETN's role in the offense minus the running back carries part of it?
Well, you got to be a running back to be able to have the role of a running back, and that's not the role of Jamal Agnew. So in other words, when Jamal Agnew lines up, like he, even though he's wearing a 30s number, the defense won't treat him like a running back. They won't match a linebacker up on him. They'll put, you know, a defensive back on him because they're going to treat him like a true wide receiver. So you're not going to get those those favorable matchups that you might end up getting or that they were kind of anticipating having with Travis Etienne in the backfield.
All right, let's move off of Jamal Agnew and on to other subject matter. Rick in Tampa next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, good morning, Jeff. Morning, Mike. Jeff, I agree with you about the line. I think Trevor's making the line better than they are with two starters out. I think Shatley, the best swing interior lineman in the NFL, they're playing above their level. My concern's always been the tackles. Yeah, Cam Robinson's in a contract year. He's going to play hard, but I suspect he won't be here next year. I just don't think we're going to pay for him. My question, if he's learning to keep his hands up, when is Walker Little get in the game, man? He was the steal of the draft, from what everybody said.
Well, I mean, he's not the steal of the draft until he proves that on game days that he's a really good football player. And so I don't think you can consider him the steal of the draft. I mean, you hope he is. And is he the future? Well, I mean, I think he definitely has a future. And what do you do? That's an interesting question. You know, I think the assumption a lot of people make is that Cam Robinson is going to be gone this year, after this year. Well, wait a minute. He may not be. You know, I think Cam's done a pretty good job so far this year. You're a football team that's got a lot of holes to fill. Do you want to have to add another hole to fill with the left tackle position, or would you like to go ahead and maybe try to find a long-term type of solution for Cam Robinson so you don't have to worry about, you know, a tackle position? And then in the future, you know, do you say, okay, well, Cam's going to be a tackle, and whether it be left or whether it be right, and now we're going to create some competition for the other tackle spot. I mean, there's a lot of things. It's a lot better to have three guys that can play and have competition than you got two guys, and then there's really no other options behind those two guys. So if you can find a way to keep Cam, and I believe this. I think Cam would be the best right tackle in the NFL if he were playing right tackle. I think he would be a natural fit for that side. Now, I don't know if he could do it or if he'd want to do it because left tackles make more money. For example, you look at his name that made the switch from Baltimore to Kansas City to play left tackle.
Orlando Brown.
And so does Cam would even consider that? No, but I mean, I think in a perfect world, I think Cam is the ultimate right tackle because first and foremost, he is an excellent run blocker. He's very strong. He's one of the few left tackles in the game that actually moves people. So there's a lot of positives with Cam Robinson, and I don't want people sitting there saying, well, you know, just kind of write him off. He'll be gone after this year. Look, if you can find a way to keep him, and if Walker Little eventually proves that he's better, then great. But right now, Walker Little hasn't proved that. In the preseason, I thought he was really good, and I thought he showed a lot of upside. But right now, and as of the last that we saw, he was not better than Cam Robinson.
Is Ben Bartsch at this point the starting right guard for you, Jeff, even when A.J. Cann gets back to full health?
I think that's a great question, and I think it's kind of a toss-up, Tony. if AJ were playing at the level that he did the last 2 years, I would say, no, AJ is still the guy there. But AJ this year hadn't played to that level. And I thought Ben has been pretty solid. I think he's one of the most improved players with this football team. I give him a lot of credit. Last year, his feet got dead and he was getting beat. And I mean, he was getting beat pretty bad, but he's really grown and he's physical and he finishes. He's got a little bit of a nasty to him. So I think that's a great positional battle, you know, between Ben and AJ. And that's the kind of problems that you want to have. You want to have a hard time trying to figure out who you need to play there, not because it's just two guys that suck. I mean, it's that are two guys that are pretty good.
All right, thank you for the call there, Rick, as we move along to Kevin in Savannah next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. A couple of encouraging takeaways from the win. It was really nice to see the players genuinely excited for the win and the anticipation of the field goal. And everyone, I mean, it just seemed like that Urban has not lost the team at all. Everyone seemed to be in the game and were truly excited after the field goal. And Miles Jack is a good player. I don't think he's a great player, but I think it was encouraging to see him sit out a game where he could watch and realize that he doesn't have to make every play on the field. He can allow the defense to work as schemed, and I think it's going to make him a better player. Thank you, guys.
Hi, Kevin. What do you say, Logs?
Well, as far as watching the team at the very end of the game and how they were all into the field goal, well, you're damn right. I mean, that's you work. I mean, it's your job. And winning and losing is what you're paid to do. And you work and you sweat and, you know, you do all that work in the off season. And absolutely. So the players are invested. Make no mistake about it. And Urban Meyer, I think, still has respect in the locker room, but it's respect that has to continue to be evolved and earned. I mean, that's just the nature of coaching in the National Football League. And the better chance that he puts players in, the more respect, the better chance of putting his players in the position of winning, the more respect he will get. And that's just the nature of the beast in the National Football League. But it was tremendous. And I mean, you got to have validation in anything you do that, hey, look, what you're doing is right. And okay, let's keep working and give you the encouragement to keep working. And so that was the most important thing, was getting a win for this football team, because you start stacking up losses just like last year. Then you sit there and as a player and as a team, you start wondering, well, what are we doing this for? I mean, we're not seeing anything tangible, you know, all this hard work, and we're just not seeing any kind of results. And it just starts to make you wonder, are you doing the right things? And you're trying to do extra things and maybe too much. And as far as Miles Jack is concerned, I think your statement is on, and that is he a great player? No, he's not a great player. I think he's a really good player, and he can be a really good player at times. But I think the greatness, if you're a linebacker, the game is the ball. And I don't know if you guys watched Darius Leonard, the linebacker for the Colts, and his impact that he had on Sunday night. That's a great player, a guy that changes the game because he gets takeaways, he impacts the passing game by getting interceptions, pass breakups, sacks, but the caused fumble, recovered fumbles, those type of things. I think if you start to get into the numbers where Darius Leonard's at, then you're talking about greatness. And Miles has been a really good player and making a lot of tackles and can make some big hits, but he's got to start finding his way into those categories if he wants to be considered great.
Do you like Miles Jack, what he had to say yesterday, just basically coming out and putting it out there that time has told the story that he's a better player without the green dot on his helmet?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, and that's not a negative. I think sometimes people can view that as a negative on Miles Jack. And no, I mean, some players can do it. Some can't. You know, for example, Paul Posluszny. You know, Pods could do it without even, I mean, it was second nature. He would do it, and it actually probably in some cases made him a better player and a more aware player. Some players can't do that. They need to focus on just what they do to have their best opportunity at being a great player. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think accepting that and then saying, okay, now let me worry about me sometimes can be the best thing. And because if you don't have the ability to self-evaluate and to be critical of yourself, then you have no chance of getting better as a player. And so sometimes you just got to be able to accept it, to recognize it, and move forward.
All right, we move along to Kyrie in Norfolk, Virginia next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Kyrie.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good, man. What's up?
Good. Jeff, I just want to ask a question. I don't know if you guys touched on this, but I had two questions. One, what do you see, what are you looking forward to as far as like Trevor Lawrence starting the second half of the year coming off the bye week? And two, what would be your game plan for us offensively and defensively going up against Seattle this week? I think you comment off there.
As far as Trevor goes, I just want to see exactly what we've been seeing the last couple of weeks, protecting the football, increasing the completion percentage, which is twofold. One, in that he needs to continue to throw better balls, and then also the receivers need to start doing a better job for him, not dropping the ball, working their way back to the ball, running better routes, becoming better route runners. And so as long as Trevor keeps those things moving forward, gaining the understanding, making quicker decisions, I think he's headed in the right direction. And I think his progress has been, and sometimes it was hard to see over the last, not the last game, but I think the couple games before that, sometimes it might have been hard to see, but it was there. But the first couple weeks, I mean, was just kind of a train wreck, which sometimes can happen for a young player. But just keep on, and that steady improvement, and with the experience and the exposure that he's getting now, and as long as he keeps improving, he's going to be just fine, and that's where we want him to be. As far as game plan goes, look, you need to be who you are. And right now, as a football team, you need to run the ball and let James Robinson be the back that he can be and maybe try to get him more touches. But, you know, that also – getting him more touches also entails being a better team on third down, which they haven't been very good. And I'm sure that's something that they looked very closely at in the bye week. Their third down efficiency is barely over 31%. That's not even close to being good enough. That puts them second to last in the National Football League. And we all sit there and go, well, we got to get James Robinson more touches. Well, yeah, that's great. But if you can string some more plays together, and that's by converting third downs and keeping the offense on the field, then James Robinson will get more touches. So the game plan's got to be who you are. Hand the ball to James Robinson, get better at third down conversion rate, allow Trevor to continue to protect the football, but also to continue to push the ball down the field, and just be efficient as an offense and in defense. You got to find a way to just be solid against the run, and be solid against a football team that doesn't have very good play at the quarterback position.
All right, Kyrie, we appreciate it. Logs, hang in there. We've hit the halftime mark here. We'll come back. Tony will take us around the National Football League, and we'll get more of your questions in for Jeff Logman, both on the phone lines or the text line at 641-1010. We'll also hit up some of the ones that have been coming in on social media this morning as well. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, gems around the NFL. Brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
Green Bay has placed wide receiver Davante Adams on their reserve/COVID list. His status for Thursday night's game against the Arizona Cardinals is unclear. He would have to have two different negative tests 24 hours apart to have a chance to play. Packers defensive coordinator Joe Barry has also tested positive for COVID, will not be coaching on Thursday night football. Arizona linebacker Chandler Jones has been activated off the team's reserve/COVID list. He missed the last 2 weeks. The Cardinals are the last remaining unbeaten team in the National Football League. Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy said yesterday that he has tested positive for COVID as well. Nagy said that no one else tested positive on Monday in the organization. He is vaccinated, will require two negative tests 24 hours apart before he is allowed to return to the stadium. The Philadelphia Eagles are trading quarterback Joe Flacco to the New York Jets in exchange for a sixth-round pick that could turn into a fifth-round pick, depending on playing time for Flacco with the Jets. Jets rookie quarterback Zach Wilson is expected to miss the next 2 to 4 weeks with a PCL injury. The LA Rams are trading linebacker Kenny Young to the Denver Broncos. The Rams are sending Young and a seventh-round pick to Denver in exchange for a sixth-round pick coming back the other way. Miami Dolphins safety Jason McCourty and running back Malcolm Brown have both been placed on the team's injured reserve list. McCourty could reportedly need foot surgery to repair an injury. He is seeking a second opinion for that before he has to go into surgery there. And New England Patriots cornerback Jonathan Jones underwent shoulder surgery yesterday. He is officially out for the year.
All right, thank you, Tony. We got Jeff Logman here with us. It is a semi-check the tape Tuesday. It's Tuesday with Logs is what it is. So if you'd like to get in, you can follow those who've come before you at 641-1010 on the phone lines or the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures, or hit us up at our various Twitter handles, Logs, like this next person did here. This is from Chris, who asks about in just last year, Tyron Johnson caught 20 of 26 targets for 400 yards, three touchdowns. That's 20 yards per reception. We here in Jacksonville are in desperate need of a field stretcher to replace Chark. Urban says that Tyron Johnson is not ready, specifically in his route running. Is this due to poor coaching or player development, or what do you pin this on, the fact that we have barely seen Tyron Johnson here?
Yeah, or just performance, that the player is not performing well enough, which, you know, I don't know the answer to that. And I think it's a great question, but unless you are kind of inside and have the opportunity to see what the young man's able to do on a day-to-day basis, it's kind of hard to know. But, I mean, when they acquired him and you look at some of his past numbers, it was with great hope that I think all Jaguar fans were like, okay, here's another guy that can stretch the field. And Urban talked about trying to get as many guys as he can to stretch the field. Because, you know, look, the one thing that I think Urban made very clear is that, you know, he's not used to not having elite speed on the outside. Well, that's because at the college level, you just go out and you recruit them and you can get – way more than the other guy if you're a really good recruiter, and that's just not the way it works at the National Football League level. So I think that's something that certainly has been probably a little bit of a learning experience for Urban Meyer, because it is very different from that aspect. You know, the way the rosters are managed in the NFL, the way they're constructed, the acquisition of talent, it is much different than the college game.
This was Urban just yesterday, as a matter of fact, on that very subject.
You know, the thing we don't have is when DJ went down, do we have that home run hitter on the outside? You know, I think LaVisca's playing very well. Marvin's playing really well. We're, you know, just one speed guy short. And it might be Agnew, maybe it's Tyron, maybe it's something else.
So Logs, they can hope it's going to be one of those guys that turns into their quote-unquote speed guy. But one thing DJ Chark was a little bit more established, and I think he drew the attention of defensive coordinators and opposing defenses more so. How big of a challenge is it if they don't establish that guy who's a legit threat down the field? I mean, you can put Tyron Johnson on the field. I don't think anybody's going to double cover him at this point in time. So how much more difficult is it to operate your offense if you don't have that guy that can force the other team to play a safety over the top against him?
Well, I think it's an interesting question, because you brought up and you kind of brought up that the DJ was able to draw that extra attention, and I don't really believe that he did. I think there was a period of time when he had great success in 2019, there were a lot of teams that started to take notice and said, okay, well, we need to do something about that guy. We better give him a little bit more attention. But attention is always deserved, and it has to be deserved on a week-to-week basis. And after 2019, I think at the beginning of 2020, some teams gave him the attention, but then at that point, the attention had to be continued to be earned. And you could see that throughout the season, the 2020 season, that attention went away. And teams weren't putting the extra attention on DJ Chark. This year, when he was playing, they were not putting the extra attention on him. So, look, it'd be great to have a guy that can draw some extra attention, because it helps make opportunities elsewhere within your football team. But also at the same token, you need a guy that just can flat out fly and you can throw him, whether he's drawing extra attention or not. And right now you don't have anybody that is scaring a defense with legitimate vertical speed. And yeah, I like Marvin Jones. He's solid and he makes contested catches and he's been a great pro. And I like LaVisca, but doesn't have great speed, doesn't get great separation. I mean, these guys aren't big-time playmakers. I mean, they're good players. But if you want to have somebody that's a difference maker, you have to have the difference maker with elite speed. And right now they don't have that productivity in their offense. And look, not every team has it. You know, it's not like every team in the NFL has a guy that can just flat out run by people. Some teams have to exist without it. And this is a team that has to exist without it and find a way to be the best that they can be without that guy, unless somebody develops.
Jeff, one of the other things we've talked about, it feels like for years now, with this Jaguars offense, is trying to find something to threaten the middle of the field. Has Dan Arnold helped them in that regard?
Big time. I think big time. And I think Dan Arnold is, I think, a really good acquisition as far as trying to find guys to add to your roster when they did, which was once the season already had begun. I mean, I thought that was a really good job. And I said this before, I think even if you just considered that a straight-up trade, which it was not, because you got a little bit better draft pick compensation than what you had to give up. But even if you just considered CJ for Dan Arnold as far as productivity, I think you're getting some of the better end of that deal, because I think Dan Arnold has done more for this football team than what CJ was doing as a defensive back, and his availability wasn't there. And his love for the game certainly wasn't there, and I hope he can figure out whatever it is that is important to him to where he can become a good player and become the talent that we've seen at the college level. But I think that definitely that Dan Arnold has done a good job. I think Luke Farrell's a good player. Manhurts is a good inline blocker. I like all the tight ends. I mean, Jacob Hollister, okay, but I like the young man Luke Farrell, and I like Dan Arnold. I like Chris Manhurts' blocking ability. The guy that I want to see start to have a little bit of an impact in the middle of a defense, because I think he can play the big physical game, as LaVisca. You know, even though he's a wide receiver and they've played him as a wide receiver and they've commended him as far as his improvement and his route running and everything else, I just view him as a different player. I view him as a player that could play kind of a hybrid tight end / wide receiver position. And I think that that's a role that he could be utilized more at.
All right, Jeff Logman is here with us, so let's utilize his expertise for the next couple of radio segments coming up with Tony Smith and ET. I'm Mike Dempsey, 641-1010. We'll get you on board on the phone lines or the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures, and we'll continue to hit those Twitter feeds as well for your questions on a semi-check-the-tape Tuesday. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Sex are great, but I would take hurries and pressures over sacks, because hurries and pressures means the quarterback has to throw the ball uncomfortably.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to throw a little bit earlier than he wants to. Mm-hmm. He's going to throw it a little bit more inaccurate. Just make life uncomfortable for the quarterback.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That was Jaguars Today's own quarterback, David Garrard, yesterday with Tony Smith here on the program, as we have Jeff Logman on with us every Tuesday. The full lineup includes Donovan Darius, Denny Thompson, and John Osier tomorrow. D-Rock bringing breakfast this Thursday, mm-hmm. and Tommy Mack on Friday, all coming your way for the rest of the week right here. So, Logs, what about, David Garrard talking about the importance of pressures and hurries more so than just sacks. Obviously, sacks are great because they're, you can hurry a quarterback or pressure him, he can still make the play. But David's point is, if you do that consistently, you're probably going to have some success in the pass rush.
Yeah, and usually when you're getting one, you're getting the other. So they kind of work hand in hand. But I understand his point, and that he'd like to be able to have the pressure and the hurry to force errant throws, which can lead to turnovers, et cetera. But also, look, sacks do the same thing for you, in that if you get a sack, now all of a sudden you're behind the sticks and you get an offense that starts to try to press, and they start getting restricted as far as the number of plays that they can go to in their playbook, and they start to press down the field, and that's where other opportunities also pop up at takeaways and things of that nature. So, I mean, they're really one and the same. And so they're both really good. And you just want to have this defense find a way to get both of them.
We've talked a lot about the run defense for this team over the course of the first six games, Jeff. But how are Malcolm Brown, who they acquired in the trade, how is he playing up front? And Devon Hamilton was a name that we heard over and over and over again throughout the offseason. It felt like early on in the year he wasn't playing very well. How has he played the last couple of weeks?
Well, he's been better. The first couple of weeks, it wasn't great. And I'm talking about Devon Hamilton. And I think at some point, whenever you get Jay Tufele, back from the hand surgery that he underwent through through the bye week. Whenever you get him back, I think you need to kind of get him in a rotation and let them two kind of compete for some playing time. I think Malcolm Brown has been solid, and he's probably the prototypical good, really good, solid run defender, 3-4 type of defensive end, defensive tackle, and he is what he is. Basically, you're getting exactly what you paid for. Good, solid football play, but he doesn't affect the passer. You know, pass rush is not his thing. I think the guy that they were hoping the pass rush could develop more was a Roy Robertson Harris, and obviously the ankle slowed him down a little bit. He's very physical. He's got kind of that build and the body that looks like he might be able to give you some type of pass rush, and I think he's got some physical attributes that he can, but it's just something that he hasn't been really consistent at, and he's continuing to develop, and hopefully he can continue to work his craft and get a little bit more production for this defense.
You can still hit us up on Twitter if you'd like today, @MD_1010XL, @1010XL, @FatTony, @Logs56, and @IME2T. If you want to get your questions in, like this one from John, Logs, is Urban bringing anything to the table in terms of developing the offensive scheme, game day, you know, adjustments, things like that? According to John, Urban seems very happy to admit he doesn't know everything, let's put it that way, when it comes to NFL tactics.
Well, and that's good. I mean, look, if he walks in the door and he thinks he knows everything, then I think that would be a big mistake. I think you have to come into the situation with a little bit of open eyes. And I think this is a good experience for him as far as learning goes. And look, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think the more comfortable you get, the more, I think, more confidence you have of inserting yourself when you should and when you can. And so he's been definitely relying upon his coordinators. And then once he sees something that he feels is needed to address, and I think then he has done that. But yeah, he's, I think, has gotten to the point where he didn't want to micromanage, but then also realized, okay, now I feel comfortable doing that, and then he's inserted himself some. So I thought his game management of the Miami Dolphins game, I thought, was really good at the end, the way they did the slider play and the way he handled the officials and making sure that they were aware that he wanted the timeout and making them aware of that. So, I mean, some of that stuff has been excellent. Some of the stuff you could maybe disagree on about the decision there in that ball game to go for it on fourth down and not kick the field goal and risk losing the momentum where they were at. But, I mean, that's I think all people can vary on that opinion a lot. But, I mean, look, this is a year I think that is very valuable for him and his growth, because the reality is that it's a different game in the NFL. And it takes a little bit of time. But look, he's an incredibly smart guy. He's won at the college level. And if you can win at the college level, you can win at the pro level. And you just got to be able to get some better players, I think. And then also you'd be able to have to get more experience. And I think there will be an adjustment period after year one under Urban Meyer. I think there will be significant adjustment, I think, to staff and the way things are done, et cetera, just because, okay, now you've been there, you've done that, you've gotten some comfort, and now you've gotten some knowledge, and now you go from there.
Do you, other than, you know, like any potential staff changes, when you talk about the way things are done with Urban Meyer, do you have things in mind, like you think that he's already realized, you know what, should have done it a different way, or is that just part of the natural process of acclimating yourself to the NFL?
I think it's just part of the natural process of forming a staff at a different level. And, you know, because you end up working with some people that you really don't have any background with, or at least a ton of background with. And so you get to know them more and you get to study them, you know, to use his term, you know, you do a deep dive into your team. But then I think also as the head coach, CEO of the football operations, you're going to do that study on what you're doing and who your coaches are and where your systems are. And I think everybody does that. I mean, look what Andy Reid did in the offseason. Andy Reid has done an incredible changeover, and it wasn't necessarily for the good, and that they tried to overhaul an offensive line. Well, Andy Reid has also done an overhaul of his coaching staff. And I'm not saying that Urban's going to do that. I'm just saying that every year at the completion of a season, you end up looking at everything. Pete Carroll's a guy that at the conclusion of every season has took a long, hard look at his staff, and he's made adjustments where he felt necessary throughout the years. And that's just, I think, part of the natural progression of trying to keep a team at the top or trying to get a team to the top.
Jeff, we had a question last week of the day where we were just asking fans who they felt like should play more, who should play less. Andre Sisco, obviously a very popular name. And answer to that question, played 20-plus snaps in each of the first couple of weeks. He's played two snaps combined defensively in the last four games. Do you expect to see Andre Sisco's role on defense start to expand with a couple of weeks of practice this week?
Well, I hope, and this kind of goes into that category of the things that we can't see kind of along the lines with, you know, Walker Little or with Tyron Johnson. You know, we don't get the opportunity to see Sisco on a daily basis and where is he at, you know, how is he physically coming back from the significant knee injury that he sustained while he was at Syracuse. There's no questioning that he's got great ball skills and what he was able to do at Syracuse. And I think there was a throw against the Miami Dolphins that that Winger had ended up going over and helped break that play up. And I was sitting there watching the play going, the guy that I watched play at Syracuse would have made that play as far as making an interception. And so, I mean, those are things that you want to be able to see in a defense that really hasn't done a lot of or hasn't gotten a lot of the takeaways. You want to get as many guys on the field as possible that can play, make plays on the ball, and Sisco's one of those guys, but you just don't know where he's at physically, mentally. Is he ready? And when he gets ready, look, coaches aren't stupid. They're not going to sit there and not play a guy for any other reason than that they not feel that he's not ready yet. So when they feel that Sisco is ready to play, and hopefully he will be ready to play at some point, because this defense needs to find takeaways, and at least historically he has been a takeaway machine.
Here was Urban Meyer yesterday, not only talking about Sisco, but really breaking down the progress of the entire draft class.
I feel really good. Trevor, obviously, ETN, you know, I just think, you know, I can't wait to get him because of his explosiveness. You got Tyson Campbell should be back this week and ready to go. We think he's going to have a long career as an excellent corner. He showed great strides. We got Walker Little. We still feel great about him. I know he had COVID issues, but he's going to be, we feel, a very good player. Help me out. Luke Farrell, I think, is better than what we thought. Our coach is really excited about him. Jay Toffoli broke his hand. By the way, he had surgery. He should be back in a few weeks. We feel good about him. Andre Sisco, we got to get him on the field. He's practicing pretty good, but we got to feel good about him. Jordan Smith still got a long way to go, but we think we knew that he'd be a developmental type guy.
All right, so Lux, let me ask you. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is what Trevor Lawrence is, and I find it hard to believe that any GM would not have drafted him number one overall. And we'll give him a pass on Travis Etienne. It's not their fault that he got hurt. So in terms of what they've gotten out of the second round and beyond, out of this year's rookie class, I know it's only six games so far, but how would you assess what kind of return they've gotten from the rookie class overall?
Well, I mean, right now, productivity really haven't gotten much. I mean, that's besides Trevor Lawrence, I think probably the best pick as far as if you look at where the player was picked at and his productivity levels, probably Luke Farrell, the tight end out of Ohio State. And that's, you know, that's just being realistic. Walker Little, second-round pick, hasn't seen the field. Toffoli hasn't really seen the field yet. Jordan Smith hasn't even been active for a game. Tyson Campbell has struggled. Sisco hasn't started, hasn't played much. I mean, so, you know, the productivity hasn't been there. But, you know, the reality is that we've seen drafts in the past in Jaguars history to where we sit there and we go, you know, hey, this is a pretty good draft. You know, and you go back to Dave Caldwell's first draft class of 2013, and we were like, man, this is a really good class. They're getting productivity, and they get a lot of guys that are playing. And then all of a sudden, three, 4 years down the road, I mean, hell, a lot of these guys weren't even in the league. And you're going, well, wait a minute. So I think it's premature, I think, always to grade a draft class the very first year. I mean, I think in reality, you'd like to be able to have productivity from day one, but that's not always the case. And what matters, I think, is where you're at in years three and four and five and six and seven, after that draft class to find out where the productivity has been. And certainly by year three, you got to start seeing something. And in year two, you'd like to start seeing some signs. But year three, you got to have guys that are producing for you. And look, it's hard to kind of sit there and go, okay, it's not good. And that you sit there and say, okay, well, this roster is not that great and they haven't gotten any productivity out of the draft class. So why should that be? And I totally could understand somebody saying something like that. But I think some of these guys that they pick, you know, Walker Little, they felt like was going to be a little bit of a project because he hadn't played football in quite some time and they knew they had some tackles, but they felt that he would be a future type prospect. And with Travis Etienne, obviously they thought he'd have an impact right away, but injury happened. Tyson Campbell's a guy that they felt good about, but really just hasn't come yet. And that's a tough position. He's taken his lumps and hopefully he continues to get better and he learns from that. Tufele, I always thought would be a guy that would compete for playing time as more of like a nose tackle. Jordan Smith, I knew was a long-term project. Cisco felt like this year might be, you know, halfway through the season, you'd get him out there just because he's coming back from the ACL. So, you know, it's still early, but you'd like to see more productivity than you have. But the ultimate grade comes down the road.
All right. Jeff Logman is here with us for one more segment of radio. If you'd like to get in, now's your opportunity. Get on board at 641-1010 on the phone lines or the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. A few more coming in on Twitter as well that we will get to as we wrap up a bonus Victory Tuesday here with Jeff Logman. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, the question of the day, driven by Maserati Jacksonville. Come experience uncompromising luxury at Maserati Jacksonville.
All right, Maserati Jacksonville does present the question of the day. And Tuesdays, we just ask you, what are your questions for Jeff Logman? And you supply them, and Jeff turns around and knocks them out of the ballpark just like that. We got a few more to go here on the phone lines. We'll get to here with Logs. Tony Smith, ET, I'm Mike Dempsey, and we go to Tyson in McClenny. And now, Tyson, a little bird tells me that you may have some Coast Guard experience with our man ET. Is that correct?
I have served with, come on, somebody.
Come on now. Tyson. Come on now.
I have served with my man ET.
Now, you were, was his supervisor, his superior officer? What was the situation?
Hey, there ain't no supervising ET. You just hope to contain him.
Amen to that, buddy.
Just hope to contain him. There ain't no supervisor.
All right. Excellent, Tyson. What do you have for Jeff Logman this morning, sir?
My question is, and it's, I don't know how the intricacies of how it works inside the office, but, you know, we picked up, the Jaguars picked up Dan Arnold earlier in the season. But then you see a couple weeks later, you see Zach Ertz getting traded to the Cardinals. Now, is it a player? Why didn't the Jaguars go after him? Or if they did, you know, to me, I mean, a veteran player like Ertz, I mean, I think it'd be perfect for Trevor Lawrence. But I'm kind of wondering how that worked, or if the Jaguars even did try to go after him. I'll take my comments off air. Somebody.
All right, Tyson.
Take care, my boy, E.T.
We will. Thank you, buddy. What do you say, Logs?
Well, I think part of it, too, is that you know, were the Jaguars interested in talking to the Philadelphia Eagles earlier on, and what's the age of Zach Ertz? You know, he's a 30-year-old tight end, and I think a lot of times when you're trying to build a program and you have a young quarterback, what you'd like to be able to do is to build it with building blocks that are going to be around for the growth of your quarterback, not somebody that's going to be there maybe for a couple years and then, you know, a few years down the road, they're pretty much done and they're not playing at a high level anymore. So maybe that was part of the equation. And then also maybe the Philadelphia Eagles just flat weren't interested in trading Zach Ertz when the Jaguars were looking at trying to find a tight end. And maybe the asking price was prohibitive, or the Jaguars viewed it as being prohibitive. So there's a lot of different factors that can come into play. And you know, when the Jaguars, when they had Caldwell and Gus Bradley, they kind of had a little bit of that mentality that, hey, look, you know, we want to make sure that we build this football team the right way. We do it with young players, and that we want to make sure that the players that we sign are going to be here for when we can get good.
And I think you got to be very careful about that, because along the way you end up bypassing some players that can help you grow as a football team and help mature your football team and the players on that team. And, you know, for example, when the Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell era started, they ended up letting go of a guy by the name of Daryl Smith. Well, Daryl Smith, they thought, wouldn't be around when they got to be better. Well, Daryl Smith was still playing at a high level and the Jaguars weren't getting any better. And he would have made you better, and he would have taught a lot of the young players on your football team how to be pros. And Mercedes Lewis was another guy. Okay, well, you know, we feel like he's getting old and we need to address the position elsewhere. Well, Mercedes is still doing a really good job for the Green Bay Packers. His role's a little bit different. So you just got to be careful about trying to be too clever and too smart and sometimes just get the better players in to be good now. And especially if they're quality people, you want to bring in quality people. Now, if somebody's not quality and there's any kind of question mark about what kind of person and what kind of leader they are or what kind of an example that they would set, then that's obviously not the type of person that you want to bring in, even though you might, you know, stomach some of that for a high level of productivity. But you got to make sure that it's going to help your football team.
Yeah, I don't think that there were any of those issues with Zach Ertz in terms of like the makeup of the guy. What I think you had with Zach Ertz were people questioning what level of play was he still capable of. He had a year career low 9.3 yards a catch last year. You know, and I think people were asking, is he coming down to the end here? And so, you know, he showed he could still get it done a little bit this year. And Arizona, being in contention, went out there and added a piece after they lost Max Williams. And I think that's how that whole thing went down. But, you know, sometimes you take a chance on that guy and it turns out great. Other times you take a chance on that guy and you find out, you know what, we should have paid attention to the signs because he was slowing down. And it's tough to know. You know, he had one touchdown last year in 11 games. And so, you know, injuries were mounting. Lack of productivity, only had 335 yards receiving last year. So you got to factor all those things in as well with Zach Ertz in that particular situation. Logs on a couple of the practice squad receivers. Julian Smith on Twitter asks, any news or just your speculation even on guys like Jeff Cotton or anybody else on that practice squad, Josh Hammond or any of the other young wide receivers getting a chance to get called up and show what they can do?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to, you know, they had brought up a couple different times before they ended up releasing them. I'm trying to remember the name of the wide receiver, the first-round pick of the Vikings that they had.
Laquon Treadwell.
Treadwell. They kept bringing Treadwell up, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. I mean, Treadwell really hadn't shown much as a wide receiver, so I mean, I'm just kind of curious as to why they were bringing him up. But they've got a lot of wide receivers on the practice squad. Jeff Cotton was pretty productive in the preseason, and I thought showed some nice things. I thought Josh Hammond showed some nice things in the preseason. But they've got, I think, four or five wide receivers on the practice squad, and so maybe at some point they will activate some of these other guys and give them an opportunity and see what they do. The biggest thing is that you've got to have, and Trevor Lawrence talked about this with Marvin Jones Jr., about how Marvin is kind of his security blanket, and chemistry is a big thing with a quarterback, and the number of snaps that receivers get with a quarterback. You can tell that LaVisca has a little bit of a comfort level with Trevor, because they obviously worked all through training camp. Agnew starting to develop some of that. And you've got to work with a quarterback to be able to get a comfort level. So sometimes it's hard to get that comfort level with guys that are on the practice squad because you're just not having the opportunity at getting the reps with the starting quarterback. So, but at some point, if you need to start elevating guys to try to get an impact, whether it becomes on the vertical aspect of the game or whatever, then, you know, you might give it a try. It's kind of like that thing where we were talking about with the defensive back Nevin Lawson, and that he got a little bit more play time over like a Trey Herndon, and we're like, oh, okay, well, maybe they're just trying to do something different. Maybe they'll do something different when it comes to activating a wide receiver on game day doing a standard practice squad elevation.
Jeff, we've talked about some of the drop issues this team has faced just now, talking about the practice squad guys and maybe looking for some impact down the road, potentially for this football team. Trevor Lawrence has completed 59.7% of his passes through six games this year. What would be a good number for him in that stat at the end of the year in your mind?
Well, hell, I'd love to see him in around 65. You know, I think that is certainly reachable and would be a good number. I mean, in a perfect world, look, I'd love to see him up there with Russell Wilson, you know, at 72%, you know, one of the top three guys in the league. You know, but is that going to be, you know, attainable? It might be a little bit much. But look, Trevor still has a lot of improvement. You know, we kind of talked about Trevor earlier and about how much improved he's been in the last three games, and it's been great. You know, look, he still has a lot of work to do, and he'll be the first one probably to tell you that, and that he needs to keep working and needs to keep getting better, because the reality is that, you know, he's 30th in completion percentage, 26th in yards per attempt, 29th in interception percentage, 30th in passer rating. So, I mean, there's a lot of work that he still has to do. But the encouraging thing is that the last three games have been much better in all of those categories in a significant way. And if he can keep improving, and at the end of the season, Tony, if we can see him in that mid-60s range of completion percentage, that would be amazing.
Logs, we'll get one more in here from Twitter, and you may agree with this point of view or not in general here, but this is from Adam. He says, at what point this year do you start allocating playing time based on the future, meaning getting some of the younger guys reps to see what they have, even if they're not necessarily, you know, the absolute best guy you have at the moment? If you think that they're a bigger part of your future than somebody else who maybe is on an expiring contract, do you go out of your way to make sure you get that guy into games to make sure you see a little bit of what he can do?
Yeah, and I've heard people talk about that in years past too, and that you know, let's look ahead and develop the guys we got. Well, I mean, that's what you're doing. I mean, you're playing some guys right now that are young, and so people say, well, okay, well, who should you play? Well, maybe what do you play, Walker Little? Well, here's the thing that has to happen first: the player has to prove that he's earned the right to play. And if he doesn't earn the right to play in the locker room's eyes, then you will have no credibility as a coach. If the coach is playing somebody saying, oh, well, we just want to look at guys to get them ready for the future, when that player is not playing at a better level than the player that was playing before. So in other words, you have to prove that you've earned your play time if you want to maintain credibility in the locker room. That goes for Walker Little. That goes for Andre Sisco. That goes for Jordan Smith, Jay Tufele, Tyson Campbell, all of these young players that, you know, you're hoping to continue to grow. Look, the growth process doesn't have to just happen on game day. The growth process can continue to happen while these players are practicing or being in a backup role or getting better in the weight room or getting better at understanding the game. So the improvement just doesn't happen just by playing alone.
All right, Jeff Logman here with us. Says no particular tape to check this week. We'll just bask in the glow of the fact that the Jags haven't lost in over 2 weeks. How about that? And let's try to extend that this week. Logs, hang in there. We'll get back to you to wrap things up here in a moment. First, let's say hello to XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit TireOutlet.com/careers. Equal opportunity employer.
All right, Joe C is here for Prime Time. What's up, Joe?
Celebrating a win twice as long is great. You are correct about that.
You know,
keep it rolling.
We're not that 5-1 team that just this has become commonplace for. So
savor.
Take as much as we can out of that one.
Hey, just to kind of put it in perspective, the last win between this past Sunday in London, not this past week, but you know what I'm talking about. If you go back in time and think about DeJuan Smoot, he hadn't even announced that he was having a baby. Mm. Since then, he had delivered his own baby.
Yes.
So, and his wife had gone through, 40 weeks of pregnancy. Yeah. So that's how long between L's. So.
Although I contend after having him on last week and he described how it all went down, he basically caught the baby.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still pretty cool.
No, absolutely. I mean, you got to have good hands in that situation. Yeah. But I don't know. Delivery might be a little bit extreme, but regardless, what are you guys delivering on the program today?
Well, we'll definitely work some Jags in, but it's Florida Georgia week, so we like to try and bring in both sides as much as we possibly can all week long. Robert Edwards, who was a big-time player for the Georgia Bulldogs, will join us, and we'll just keep rolling through Georgia memories, Gator memories, and we've been talking a bunch about Dan Mullen and a hot seat that could be there for him if the team doesn't look well against the Georgia Bulldogs. I got a feeling they're going to, but if he doesn't, if he lays another egg, Gator fans are going to be all over.
All right, Joe, have a good show.
All right, thank you, fellas.
For the next 3 hours, Joe Coward joined by Matt Hayes, Big Surs, and Hacker coming your way here on 1010XL Logs. As we wrap up today, where can folks catch you between now and game day?
Let's see. Later today, me and JP Shadrick got Jaguars Happy Hour, got the Urban Meyer Show radio show today. Also, that's on social media, so you can watch the video portion of that as well. Jags, no Jags Wired this week, but we do have Jaguars All Access this week. I'm going to be breaking down some film with the relationship between Trevor Lawrence and Marvin Jones Jr., and then the outdoor show Saturday, and then we have kickoff from Seattle on Sunday, so be a busy week.
All right, we will talk to you on the pregame, Logs. Have a good rest of your week, man.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, buddy, there he goes, Jeff Loggeman, out the door, and what is typically a check the tape Tuesday. We'll have plenty of tape to check, hopefully victorious tape, next Tuesday. Tony, parting shot, what do you got?
Go Braves.
I knew it was coming, so I gave you that opportunity right there. So that's the way it goes. I can't really say go cheaters, so, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Cancel the World Series. That's where I'm at, E. Just cancel it. Nobody cares. Cancel the whole thing.
I don't really care. So, yeah,
I will not root for the Astros to win, but I will root for the Braves to lose.
Wait, the Astros, they were the one that cheated. Was that last year?
They're
a couple years ago. They cheated forever, the Dodgers and the Yankees. With the,
dang, and they in the World Series.
Yeah, I wonder how they got there. I'm just going to assume. look, none of the players got punished for cheating. I'm going to assume they're still cheating. Prove me wrong. I don't know.
Crazy.
I'm that guy sitting at the table. Change my mind. All right. I will definitely root for the Braves to lose.
Jump on the bandwagon, E.T. It's okay. Mike won't ever jump on that bandwagon, but
E.T.,
I can get you.
Sixers tonight, baby. Let's do this. All right. We're out of here. We're all rooting for D-Rock to break out the wallet and bring us a nice breakfast. Hey, loser. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks for welcoming me back. Tomorrow we'll have Donovan Darius, Denny Thompson checking out the quarterback play around the National Football League. Johnny O will stop by as well. For Tony Smith and E.T., I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Jeff Loggeman for spending the time with us today. We'll be back tomorrow from 10 to noon with more Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville. We on the right track to get them Super Bowls, baby.